A big show of support for science this weekend here in Northeast Florida and all across the country. Good Thursday morning and live from Studio 5, this is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross, and we are always live at 9. Also, never miss a show. Download the WJCT app. Listen anytime. You can stream the audio right now live, too, on our Facebook page. And just ahead, a look ahead to this weekend's March for Science, locally and nationwide. Hear all about the big push to support scientific research as people take to the streets. What are your thoughts? Get on the line now at 549-2937. Then later, don't miss our conversation with renowned Eat, Pray, Love best-selling author Elizabeth Gilbert. We'll tell you about her big appearance at the Florida Theater, plus a look at weekend events with The Spectator, that and more ahead this morning. But first this hour, marching in support of science. Yes, science. You know, science. Scientific research has brought us everything from vaccines to clean drinking water, electricity, the automobile, and so much more, all aspects of modern life that benefit us all. Well, this weekend, hundreds of marches for science are going to take place around the country on Earth Day. The big turnout is driven at least in part by perceptions that there is a current war on science and rational thought. The marches are intended to support and energize the scientific community and stress the importance of valid scientific research, the importance of scientific discovery to save lives and make the world safer and more prosperous. Now, the Jacksonville March for Science is expected to have a big turnout this weekend, along with a march in St. Augustine. We're going to begin the hour with a closer look as we welcome four in-studio guests, Bonnie Hendricks and Boa White, co-captains of the Women's March Jacksonville chapter. Boa, also an organizer for Greenpeace. Good to see you.
Thank you.
Also in studio, Dr. Marie Crandall, trauma surgeon with UF Health and director of their research department of surgery. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
And Eddie Whistler, he's director of the Brian Gooding Planetarium at the Jacksonville Museum of Science and History. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
And we're already getting lots of calls. What are your thoughts and questions about Earth Day this Saturday and a big turnout expected nationwide at the March for Science, marches locally, nationally? We want your calls. It's 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Go online, send your emails to First Coast Connect at WJCT.org, tweets to at Melissa in Jax, or weigh in on our Facebook page. Eddie Whistler, let's begin with you. A big march in Washington is expected Saturday, the March for Science there, but we're going to see a local turnout as well here in our area. What's going to be happening Saturday?
So some of the big things that are going to happen at 10 o'clock, you're going to want to come make sure that there's your favorite parking spot for downtown. Make your way to the landing, and right at 10 o'clock, we'll start with speakers. We have four speakers, all of which are a very diverse group of people who are diverse in terms of their field and what it is that they're experts at. Mm-hmm. We have a CEO of Neuro Initiative, which is a neuroscientist. We have on-site environmental consulting, a co-owner of that company, which is an LLC. We have a chair of the University of North Florida Department of Chemistry and a lead scientist in the writing of the State of the Lower St. John's River Basin report. And then we also have a 2012 Duval County Teacher of the Year, who is a science teacher and that I've worked closely with in other regards, but a 21-year science teacher. So we have a lot of different people who are going to be speaking, and that starts at 10 o'clock. Very short and sweet, 10-minute addresses to the audience, and they're meant to give as inspiring speeches as possible to really gather the crowd.
And really sort of whip up support for science. Bonnie Hendricks and Boa White, you're co-captains of the local chapter of the Women's March. You're not scientists, but you're marching. Why? Bonnie.
Well, I think that what we've seen occur since the election has disturbed people at home, people in positions of power, scientists across the U.S. and in other countries. The Women's March in January started a national grassroots movement. We now have chapters in every state. And in Florida, we have several chapters. we're marching because part of our mission is that we believe in communities, we believe in family, we believe in protecting our rights, our health, and our safety. And we truly believe that this administration has launched an attack on our environment and on science.
President Trump's first budget, his first pass at it was declared DOA in Congress, but it did reflect the Trump administration's priorities. And Dr. Crandall, I'd love to get your thoughts, too. President Trump wants big cuts to environmental and climate science research. He wants to slash nearly $6 billion from the National Institutes of Health budget, which conducts important scientific research. Dr. Crandall, is that in part what's motivating you to speak and be part of this?
Even before I knew about the proposed budget cuts to the NIH, which are extraordinary and potentially catastrophic, and ones that we would feel for generations to come, I was deeply opposed to the anti-science and anti-woman motivations of this administration. In an anti-science perspective, I really don't understand that. I don't understand the anti-intellectualism, anti-science, because science is ultimately the human search for truth. It is a systematic evaluation of the physical world via observation and experimentation. It is the search for truth. Without science, we wouldn't have clean drinking water. We would have maternal mortality of up to 30%, depending on your communities, and things that are still experienced in the developing world. Science has improved virtually every aspect of our lives. But I can't distance that from being a feminist. So As a woman, I see women's rights, women's reproductive freedoms being attacked and assailed from Washington and on state levels. And really, as a female scientist and surgeon, I couldn't be where I am without reproductive freedom and things like equal pay for equal work and the strive toward equality and the women's movement that has made me what I am. And so I think those things are interchangeable. I think that the retrogressive opinions of the current administration are not based in fact, not based in science, and certainly not in the best interests of the American people and women.
Boa White?
Well, I believe that our policies should be based on science and bipartisan. When it comes to climate change, it's clear that President Trump has launched a full-blown attack on our climate and on scientists, and he is trying to regress all the progress we have made in the past 10 years even on climate science. In Washington right now, there's an attack on the EPA, and in Washington, fisheries basically rely on the EPA to give them up-to-date information on the water so they can stay ahead of the curve.
What would you say, Eddie Whistler with the Brian Gooding Planetarium at the Mosh? Officially, these marches are nonpartisan. They're trying to just draw bipartisan support for science and scientific research, officially.
Sure.
Unofficially, a lot of the energy and momentum around the March for Science is driven at frustration or disagreement with the Trump administration. So in that sense, they're quite partisan. What would you say to those listening who might say, well, I support science, but I see this as an attack on the Trump White House?
Well, I feel like, so far we've only mentioned one person, and, you know, fairly, this is the person that is at the top and the leader of a country, but he's a reflection of the way that people have felt about certain issues in science way before his election. Now, climate change is not small, but is one field of science where science is under attack. Teaching science in terms of, let's say, evolution inside of the classroom is another one where we would need to be informed and create policies in order to handle that issue properly. But we also hear whispers or shouts in terms of other things like vaccination. We need to be informed when it comes to gun control. I think an interesting thing is that we have this identity politics that's happening worldwide. Well, at least in the nation. Let's take just a few things. You have gun control, you have abortion, and you have another issue like climate change. If I was to know how you felt on any one of those issues, I could fill in the blanks on how you felt about five other issues.
Right.
This is a sign of us collectively not thinking clearly about issues. We really should. This is a sign of us camping and finding tribes. And I think that that's...
And you think the scientific community is a punching bag, it sounds like, in this whole really acrid partisan environment. The scientific community, increasingly in recent years, has expressed the sentiment that the validity of their work is trying to be delegitimized.
Sure.
Is that why you think there's so much passion around this march this weekend?
I think so. This is something that's definitely been bubbling up, and these are issues that I've been, you know, considering and thinking about for a long time. So it's explicitly political. We need to consider that politics is the way that we approach designing a society. And that design needs to be well informed.
Bonnie Hendricks.
Well, I really want to get back to this issue of Republican versus Democrat versus independent and really think about science as being nonpartisan. Mm. If the decisions that this administration makes and the decisions that we, the public, support, they impact us today, they impact us in the future. Mm. Our concerns are around protecting the way of life, the quality of life that we have now, and finding a suitable balance between business operations and jobs and keeping us safe, keeping our environment protected, and keeping us healthy, and protecting the rights of the individuals. And when you put big business in front of the safety of people, safety of the environment, safety of our children, safety of our way of lives, we think that's wrong.
All right, and let's go to lots of calls now as we'll continue the discussion with a very full studio this morning, looking ahead to this weekend's big series of marches for science. Give us a call at 549-2937. Let's start with Justin in Nocatee. Hey, Justin, good morning.
Hi, good morning, Melissa. Can you hear me?
Sure, go ahead.
Hi, I'm just calling. I'm a member of the Progressives Group in Nocatee, PZUP. We'll be marching in St. Augustine, so just wanted to lend our support to the Jacksonville marchers and completely agree on our concern about the rollbacks of environmental policies and climate change, and we can already see it down here in St. Augustine. Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Justin. Yeah, it's important to note that there will be a march in St. Augustine Saturday as well. It kicks off at 9 a.m. at the Willie Gallimore Center. They'll be marching through historic St. Augustine on Earth Day as well. 549-2937. Nick in Callahan. Hey, Nick. Thanks for calling.
How you doing this morning?
All right, thanks.
I love science. We love going to the Museum of Science and History, but as science progresses, my big thing is the Museum of Science and History has it. The same exhibits, and if we're trying to progressive as scientists, why is it the same thing we teach in our kids? It's the same thing from when I was a child that my kids go on field trips and see. Nothing's changed. The only history is a little box on the second floor by the elevator that's got some old walrus tooth in it. The science of...
What would you like to see at the mosh, Nick?
Ma'am?
What would you rather see at the mosh?
As science progresses, it's open-minded, anything's different, but having the same well exhibit and heart and cranium exhibit from when I was a kid might be a little different.
Okay.
They can change the well exhibit, teach evolution, as he was saying. Or anything besides just well sonar.
All right, thanks, Nick. All right, Eddie, he's got you on the spot. What about that question?
Well, so there are permanent exhibits that we have. Those are our core exhibits, and they speak to the history of North Florida. We do we on a regular basis are updating our main exhibits. We have all kinds of new exhibits. Some of our core exhibits are regularly being renovated, if not completely redone. We have a core exhibit downstairs that deals with the human body in just such a way. This is brand new, and it'll be with us for a little while. And not only that, but some of the programs that we're going to be doing are also brand new. For example, some of the things that we talked about Well, in the planetarium itself, we're moving forward with all kinds of new programs. But one of the things that we still need to talk about at some point in time is what the rest of the march looks like. So if we can take some of that time in order
And we've got a lot of time on the show this morning. One more call. We'll go back to more about the march and keep speaking with our panel. Chris in Arlington. Go ahead, Chris.
Yes, ma'am. I was just calling to make some comments about the science deniers. I heard John Rutherford on this program when he was running for office, and you did a good job trying to counteract it, but I heard him denying climate change and stating that the science just wasn't there. And, it would be almost comical if it weren't so frightening that these politicians can just deny all the facts and the evidence that's been presented. I just think it's a very important issue, and I think we need to keep pushing back on that and ensure that people understand that, you know, science is fact-based, not opinion-based.
Thanks, Chris. Dr. Marie Crandall.
So, first of all, let me state that my views are my own, and I'm not attempting to promote the views of the University of Florida College of Medicine, Jacksonville. However, I think it's disingenuous to say that our current atmosphere about science isn't partisan. It is partisan. Less than 25% of Trump supporters endorsed that they believed the human contribution to current climate change, or even that climate change exists, as opposed to more than 90% of Hillary Clinton supporters in the previous election. So I think that there is a partisanship to who is aligning with what views in what tribe, if you will. And the potentially catastrophic effects of uncontrolled climate change are something that I may not have to worry about in my lifetime, but the next lifetime will. And it's only someone with a perspective of science and history who can understand that. We're seeing not just climate change issues, but social justice and human rights issues that are reflections of poor insight into previous administrations, previous world global decisions. And I think that the same thing is true for issues about women's health at this point in time. So I think it's disingenuous to say that it's not partisan. And I will say from my personal perspective that it is partisan.
Here's an email. Here's an email from a listener. One of the problems we have in the scientific community is the trouble with boiling complex science issues down into concepts that the general public can grasp and relate to. As scientists, we often talk way up here when trying to communicate to the public. Your speakers today are good at communicating about the importance of science. Boa White, you wanted to say something. Okay, Bonnie.
So let me clarify. I do not believe that science and our concern about global warming and the climate should be a partisan issue. Is it playing out as a partisan issue? Yes, and it's being leveraged to incite the base on the right, to activate them. It's being leveraged as a preventer and high cost or inhibitor of job creation within this country, and that's wrong. They're using science in an inappropriate way, and they're stripping it out of all the regulations. When you put Scott Pruitt in charge of the EPA, knowing that he sued the EPA in 2011 for the Good Neighbor Rule, which would reduce smog emission and pollutions that go from one state to the next, that he went to court to block a policy to reduce toxic mercury and acid gases, when he fought the clean air standards for national parks, and when he is a pronounced climate skeptic, I think it's the wrong thing to do, obviously. But I think it's being used because the next thing that the administration does is pass executive orders that allow previous climate rules and actions that have been put in place to be repealed or revoked or looked at. And if they're too costly to businesses, they can be reduced and eliminated, such as allowing coal runoff and sludge into streams and rivers.
What would you say to supporters of the reversal on the climate actions undertaken by the Obama administration, in particular the U.S. signing on to the Paris Accord, and also President Obama's Clean Power Plan, which utilities like JEA have described as incredibly onerous to comply with, too expensive, job-killing? It always seems to boil down to that sort of debate. Boa.
Well, actually, currently, I believe it's in Tampa, there is going to be a solar power panel they're going to be creating those there, and it's actually going to create over 500 jobs. And just in Nevada, they did the same thing, and it created over 1,000 jobs. So, no, climate change is not a, you know, denying climate change doesn't help jobs, you know.
But in the short term, for example, for JEA to comply with much stricter regulations that President Trump wants to reverse, in the short term, that could mean a big increase in utility rates. Not something popular with the public.
No.
So what about those aspects of this? Dr. Crandall.
So, Melissa, you're absolutely right. There are short-term costs associated with adapting to the realities of a changing climate. But in comparison with the long-term costs of some of the disastrous environmental policies that are being put in place, like fracking, the cost of earthquake-induced damage to structures, businesses, roads, to the environment, to the cost of having to cool a warming globe, and the cost of rising oceans, and related to that, flooding, loss of fresh and clean drinking water, the poisoning of the local drinking water, which is experienced in Flint, that's not going to be cleared up for I don't know how many years. So the cost of those things, the downstream effects, the not this quarter, but in the next decade, the next two decades, those costs are catastrophic. But I suppose if you're a business person and in the current business environment, the thing that matters is this quarterly profit, not the things that are going to keep us sustainable in the long term, but are less expensive and less costly.
Lots of tweets, Facebook comments about this weekend's big push for science around the country. Adam tweets the show, "Science doesn't care what you believe." He says it's troubling how people believe things because of indoctrination, not reason. Promote critical thinking. On our Facebook page, Susan writes, "Vaccines save lives. Climate change is real. Evolution is fact. That will be my sign for Saturday's march." Okay, let's go to Sadir on the line in Mandarin. Sadir, good morning. You're on the air.
Good morning, Melissa. Thanks for taking my call. I just have a very simple comment. Instead of doing all these marches, what if these people go out and vote? And then people like Rutherford will not get elected, who do not believe in the science. That would be the simplest solution. Thank you. Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you. You know, former Sheriff Rutherford ran for Congress, and let's talk about this for a minute. He didn't run on these issues. He ran on a lot of other issues that were really important to the voters of Congressional District 4 that elected him. And climate change, frankly, Bonnie, was not at the top of the list of the constituency that elected Congressman Rutherford. So it's really striking to note how different sets of issues, honestly, are animating the different voter bases in this country.
Absolutely. And I think that's one reason you see grassroots movements like the Women's March, like Indivisible, like the Progressive Coalition now heating up. And I think you're going to see some vastly different voting trends in the future. If you look at what happened in Georgia with 48% for a Democrat in a red district, that tells you that people are now more interested. One thing about Rutherford, we had a group meet with Rutherford last week. They walked away from Rutherford's office saying that Rutherford indicated that he was not aware that federal dollars did not go to abortions in Planned Parenthood. If that's how informed Rutherford is, he is my representative. I had voted for him. I would be extremely concerned.
You made him aware, though, right?
And, absolutely.
And have you met with Congressman Al Lawson, the other congressman for our area?
No.
Okay, Eddie.
Well, in terms of marching, there's a lot of different ways. Voting obviously is one, and a different discussion is the level of voter turnout in the country. I think that we can all agree that that's a subject that is important and needs to be talked about. Why the lack of participation in voting and in democracy, but. Lots of different ways to exercise community, lots of different ways to come together and network. Marching is certainly something that is worthwhile and can even be fun. And let's not, so stepping aside from everything that we've been talking about, one of the major goals of the National March for Science is just in terms of celebration of science. Science is all around us, and it is crucially important that if we're going to build a society utilizing science in almost every way possible, yet have a public that is very ill-informed about some of the main scientific issues, this is just a recipe for disaster in the long run. So celebrating science, what it can teach us, what it has taught us, and how it works, the method of science, are all very relevant to what I do and what this march is about also.
And Dr. Crandall, as a surgeon, science has been a big factor in the development of your specialty.
Oh, absolutely. So we wouldn't know the best ways to treat diverticulitis. We wouldn't know the best ways to treat gunshot wounds. We actually wouldn't know the best ways to prevent death from gunshot wounds if it weren't for science. Again, it's the observation and experimentation of the physical world that gives us science and leads us to truth. And with those repeated observations, you can make associations and determine cause and effect. So with respect to the science march, one of my areas of interest in research has been gun violence, which has been challenging in many ways, just because of lack of funding and because of the, although I would like to say nonpartisan, it's absolutely also partisan in terms of funding for research.
And are surgeons increasingly talking about gun violence as a public health issue, as a way to take the politics out of it and talk about the toll it takes on public health?
Absolutely. So we know, we've been trying to take a criminal justice approach to this, and mass incarceration is what ensued to tremendous cost to taxpayers and to communities and individuals. Whereas a more public health approach, which is community-minded, treating it as an epidemic or endemic problem in particularly distressed communities has been very effective in cities like Baltimore at decreasing the levels of endemic violence. And it's a potentially more costly upfront, but cost-effective approach because you have decreased costs of incarceration, and you also save communities and you save people.
And if you're just tuning in, we're looking ahead to Saturday. It's Earth Day, and it's also the date for Marches for Science in Jacksonville, St. Augustine, and around the country. What are your thoughts? 549-2937. Don on the South Side. Hey, Don. Good morning.
Good morning. I've got a suggestion for anyone who is interested. Now that we have these things like Google and all of that, you can look things up. The future Supreme Court Associate Justice Lewis Powell put out a memo in the 70s to try to engage the Republicans to take over, you know, by claiming, for instance, left-wing news is biased and things like that. The other one is Edith Ephraim, and she wrote a book that didn't go anywhere until Nixon handed it out freely. And the idea was to take over control of Congress and the presidency and to write their own rules. And here we are. We're now in a position where Ryan and the rest of them can kind of do what they want, and we have a president that puts in people who are fighting the EPA, all of that. It's just, history will teach us a hell of a lesson here if we're willing to look into it. Anyway, that's my comment, and I'll take the comments off the air.
All right. Thank you, Don. Lots of calls. Jeff in St. Augustine. Go ahead, Jeff.
Where does science come down in population control? We're dabbling in gun violence and everything else. How do we come down on that?
Science with regard to population control? Okay, he hung up the phone. Go ahead.
You know,
Eddie.
The future, given what it is that science has made possible so far, I think that looking forward, science is capable of, as long as we, so I'm a big design advocate, and if we approach the idea of civilization with design principles built in, as long as we align ourselves with the processes of the planet and we look for sustainability, I can see that it's possible that the planet might... I don't know.
Let's
I guess it's a complicated issue when we talk about population.
Yeah. That's okay. Let's go to Chuck at the beaches now. He's been holding. Hey, Chuck, you're on the air.
Hello, guys. I want to kind of take science to task. and you've got some medical people there, doctors. I want to take the pharmaceutical industry, and I want to take the medical industry. You're talking about gun violence and gun deaths. For every gun death, and I'm surprised you haven't even mentioned this, for every gun death in Duval County, there are three people who die from an opiate overdose. The pharmaceutical industry introduced this to OxyContin. They put it in every kitchen cabinet in America. And then they reduced the death. And we had 25,000 people die every year from drug overdoses. That's more people than are killed in cars, more people than killed by gun violence. And 20 years from now, the journalists are going to look back at what the pharmaceutical industry and what the medical industry did, and the Democrats and the Republicans, by allowing this to be in our kitchen cabinets. We have an epidemic.
Okay, thanks,
and
Chuck.
Yeah,
and you're absolutely right. Not to cut you off, but I want to get a few more points in before we wrap it up. What about that doctor?
I think he's absolutely right. The opioid epidemic is something that we're just beginning to address, and in some ways, we're victims of our own success. We were very poor at controlling patients' postoperative pain, chronic pain, people with chronic illness, and the pain of cancer. And we became much better at it. We found more powerful medications, ones that lasted longer, ones that controlled people's symptoms. But we failed to understand the process or incorporate understanding of the process of addiction in that and abuse. So I think that we've become victims of our own success, and indeed many states, in particular Florida, are incredibly hard hit by the opioid epidemic and the opioid process. It's actually really remarkable. I had moved from Chicago, where I worked at Northwestern, and has a much smaller
prescription. My alma mater. I didn't know that. All right.
Much smaller prescription overdose death rate per capita than Florida, and prescription patterns were different there. So I cannot deny that the opioid crisis is serious and real and a subject of much investigation right now.
And here's an email from Linda. Recently on your show, you talked about how Jacksonville has pulled out of an organization of 100 cities dealing with climate change and sea level rise. Please ask the Science March tomorrow to address this position by the city. And she's talking about how last year Jacksonville pulled out of the Rockefeller Foundation's 100 Resilient Cities initiative. It awarded Jacksonville a grant of about $1 million to address the impacts of sea level rise and extreme weather. Is that going to come up tomorrow, or Saturday rather, at this march?
In terms of the city, so what's going to come up is really going to be up to the individuals who are involved. Now, you know, I think one of the biggest things that we really need to wrap our minds around is that we're going to have all of these people collected. We're going to enjoy the time that we're going to be spending. We're going to be marching, and in a respectful way, I think that people are capable of vocalizing and having discussions about these kinds of things. Now, I'm not an expert in this particular point that she brings up, but I think that it's fair for people to be able to vocalize their thoughts on the issues during the march.
Yeah, the speakers will not be regulated on what they're going to say, and it's not like they're giving us a script of what they're going to speak about, but I can certainly see where that would become an issue.
Okay, and here's one more email from Ricardo. Focus on the Ebola response, the Zika scare, the bird flu epidemic. Science is not just about climate change or about faith or other hot button issues. People need to know science is about things that affect us every day. Car safety, smartphones, energy independence. Thanks for that, Ricardo. So again, this is happening Saturday downtown at the Jacksonville Landing, a companion march at the Willie Gallimore Center in St. Augustine. One more thought?
Yeah, one more thought. So the root of the march and what's going to be happening, I want to make sure that we cover some of this. We're going to have the speakers that begin at 10 o'clock. Right around 10:45, we're going to be marching over the Acosta Bridge. Yeah, bring water, bring your walking shoes. It's very appropriate that on Earth Day, we're going to be out exercising on a 1.2-mile walk. The water taxi for St. John's Water Taxi is going to be open, able to take people across the river. Look on the Facebook page for the Jacksonville March to get more information on that. And then once we come over the Acosta Bridge, we're going to land right at the footsteps of Mosh, where we are going to be doing demonstrations outside. It'll be myself, and then we'll be having events inside for Earth Day. So keep an eye on all that and come join us.
Thanks so much for being with us. Bonnie Hendricks and Boa White with the local chapter of the Women's March, Dr. Marie Crandall, U of Health, and Eddie Whistler of the Brian Gooding Planetarium at the Jacksonville Mosh. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Much more still ahead later. Some ideas for your weekend. But up next, a conversation with best-selling author Elizabeth Gilbert as she visits Jacksonville. Back in a moment.
Hendricks Avenue Baptist Church is a place to experience Christ's presence and God's Spirit in a vibrant faith community. HAB celebrates diversity, seeks to bridge differences, and journeys together in an honest and authentic search for truth. HABchurch.com. Find a different way of being Baptist.
I'm Indira Lakshmanan. In the world of cable news, Bill O'Reilly was king. He delivered big audiences and made big money for America's most watched news channel. But his days at Fox News are over following complaints of sexual harassment. What does this case tell us about how women are treated at work and the power of advertisers fearing bad PR?
Weekdays at 10 after First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
Join WJCT at Fort Caroline Timucuan Preserve on April 29th to explore the outdoors for International Migratory Bird Day. Kids will have the opportunity to become a National Park Junior Ranger, hunt for nature treasures, win prizes, and more. Clifford the Big Red Dog will be on hand with National Park Rangers, teaching families about how to preserve existing natural habitats. This fun family event is free and runs from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. Go to wjct.org/events for more information.
On the next Jazz Night in America, piano giant Randy Weston at 90. And I get to hang out with him at his Brooklyn home.
My mother gave me the black church, so I had Panamanian father and a Virginia mama. I'm born in Brooklyn, with all the Caribbean and African and all the different people in Brooklyn, you know. So the culturally, it was very rich.
I'm Christian McBride, and that's on the next Jazz Night in America.
Saturdays at 8 p.m. and Thursdays at 11 p.m. on 89.9 WJCT.
Carrie. Welcome back. New York Times bestselling author Elizabeth Gilbert will appear at the Florida Theater next week. Gilbert first rose to fame with her hit novel Eat, Pray, Love. It was eventually made into a film starring Julia Roberts. Now, in her new book, Big Magic, she has a message. Don't write or create for the money or the fame. Do it just for the joy of it. I spoke with Gilbert and Sarah Boone, executive director of Theater Jacksonville, about this big fundraiser. Take a listen. Elizabeth Gilbert, such a pleasure to have you on the show. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you. My pleasure to be here.
Also with us here in studio, Sarah Boone, Executive Director of Theater Jacksonville. Sarah, it's so exciting that Elizabeth Gilbert is coming to Theater Jacksonville. How did this all come about?
Well, I saw Elizabeth do her lecture last year, and it hit me that it would fit with our mission at Theater Jacksonville. So this has been a year in the works. It's
wow.
Right around the corner.
About to happen. Of course, Elizabeth, people all over the world know and love your work. Eat, Pray, Love, such a hit, made into a movie as well. And your new book, Big Magic, I think resonates with any creative person. I love reading through this book. And the idea is that you should pursue your creative passion just for the joy of it, without worrying about the outcome. How did the idea for this book come to you?
Well, you know, it's a book I've been thinking about writing for, oh Lord, over 12 years, and the principles in that book are the principles that I guide my own life by. But I think the reason it took me so long to finally write it was because the book is imbued with a certain amount of magical thinking. I tend to think of creativity as a sort of magical, mysterious force, almost a supernatural force, and I engage with it as though it is. And I would guess I was a little nervous about putting that idea out into the world, about the honest way that I operate with this. I do have this theory that ideas have consciousness and they have will and they want to be made and they spend eternity circling the earth looking for human collaborators. And I don't mean it as a metaphor. I actually really believe it. And anybody who's ever done any creative work will recognize that that is what it feels like. It does feel like a kind of mysterious visitation. And the reason I try to encourage people to engage with that force, regardless of the outcome, is because of the way that it will change you. You know, it may not change the world, and the work that you make may not be the most beautiful and magnificent transformative thing for other people, but you will be transformed by it through engagement with that mystery. And that alone is worth doing because it's one of the privileges of a human life.
Yeah, the whole idea of how thoughts become things, and it was fascinating to read about in your 20s when you were writing and had no money and you were involved in a writer's workshop with some friends with no thought of eventually becoming a best-selling author. You were just really excited by doing this work. Sarah Boone, this is a message I think that a lot of people are going to be so excited to hear. Tell us a little bit more about this event.
Well, Liz is going to be speaking and doing a Q&A after, but you know, one of the things that resonates with us is at Theater Jacksonville is, you know, we provide a safe environment for people to pursue their creative goals, and it's so important to us. We're moving in on our 100-year anniversary, and it jives with so much of what Elizabeth talks about. So it's a double whammy good time, I think, for everybody.
And this is neat too, Elizabeth, because this aligns also with the mission of Mental Health America of Northeast Florida. They are producing the event. Theater Jax is going to donate 200 pre-signed copies of your new book, Big Magic, to the Dolores Barweaver Policy Center to support their work lifting up young women and girls. Really cool, all of these threads coming together at this event.
I love it.
Yeah, and these are causes that are personally important to you, I take it, as well.
Oh, well, absolutely. I mean, you know, by all means, you know, people's sense of well-being in their own skin and their own lives and their own environment is something that I never stop talking about. And the uplifting of girls and women in society is essential to everything that I am. You know, it's the most important stuff that there is. I'm delighted by that.
And Elizabeth Gilbert is such a big name, Sarah, that this is a fundraiser for Theater Jacksonville. You're in San Marco, but this is actually happening at the Florida Theater.
It is.
Because so many people want to come out and meet Elizabeth Gilbert.
Yeah, we don't want any confusion. It was quite clear that our 300-seat facility was not going to have the capacity for her crowd. So we're over at the Florida, which is the other historic theater in Jacksonville, which is, you know, we have joint missions. And, you know, it's so important for us to have these community partnerships with everyone.
Well, Elizabeth Gilbert, it's such a pleasure to speak with you. We so look forward to you visiting Jacksonville. Thanks for joining us.
I can't wait. It's going to be incredibly fun, I guarantee.
And a look at weekend events right after this.
Environmental activist Tenny White gained a lot of attention helping people in poor black communities.
Their objective was to shut me up. I will not be shut up.
It may have been too much attention.
I think she was set up because she was putting pressure in all the right places.
The story of Tenny White on the next Reveal from the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX.
Thursday at 1 on 89.9 WJCT.
Today's segment with Carrie Speckman is brought to you in part by Blue Bamboo Asian Kitchen.
Welcome back. Well, it's an amazing volunteer-based organization supporting local canine units with law enforcement. It is just amazing what these canine units do for this community. You can support them at a special event Saturday. We've got a preview right now with Debbie Johnson, the founder, and Eric Heineman, executive director of Canines United. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So good to see you both. In a moment, we'll talk all about the second annual 5K and fun run for Canines United happening at Nocatee. But first, Debbie Johnson, you founded Canines United, and what motivated you to do that?
Actually, it was Barron's death when Barron was killed in St. Johns County. I saw.
And Barron was?
Canine Barron was with. He's a. He was a law enforcement canine with St. Johns County Sheriff's Office. I saw his death on the news, and it just captured my heart.
Right, so. And so it all began from there.
Yes.
And so the whole purpose then, Eric, of Canines United is to really support the efforts of these canine units all over Northeast Florida. And they do some amazing things with the police, don't they?
Yes, they actually do. And you're right. We're here to support the canine units themselves. We also want to honor those that gave the ultimate sacrifice on a national basis. These canines are amazing law enforcement officers, and they do amazing things that I think a lot of the people in the community don't even realize what they do.
People tend to think of canines as going in and doing drug sniffing, but what are some of the other functions they really help law enforcement with?
They do search and rescue as far as missing people, as far as missing children, Alzheimer patients. They do so many things, community awareness. Obviously, they help take the drugs off the street, you know, catching the bad guys.
Right. And they form incredible bonds with the officers they are paired up with, too.
Yes, absolutely. They go with them. A lot of people don't realize they go home with the handler every day, 24/7. They're like a part of the family.
People can learn all about this Saturday in Nocatee. This is your second annual event. What's going to be happening?
Yeah, so on Saturday at Nocatee, right behind Publix there, we're going to have a 5K run and 1 mile fun run for those who want to participate. And more importantly, we're going to have a lot of community events going on as well. So things for the kids, rock climbing wall, face painter. We're going to have over a dozen vendors out there. And more importantly, we're going to have a canine demo. And so people can really see what the canines do and all their special skills. Yes.
Are you going to demonstrate how they can go in and find something quickly just by that incredible nose they have?
That and how they actually will protect our streets and go after the bad guys.
Awesome. Mm-hmm. Now, Debbie, how can people be part of this? Can they show up the morning of, or would you like them to register?
Yes, they can either show up if a family wants to show up and just take part of the events, or if they decide that they want to come out and walk or run in the event, then we have same-day registration.
Same-day registration this Saturday, April 22nd in Nocatee. It's the second annual 5K race and 1 mile fun run to support Canines United. Just a great local organization. 20 canine teams will be on hand. It'll be amazing to see this demonstration and lots more to happen. Debbie Johnson is the founder of Canines United. Eric Heineman, the executive director. Again, that's Saturday in Nocatee, right behind the Publix, right?
That's correct.
Saturday morning. Get out and enjoy that this weekend. Thank you both so much for being here.
Thank you for having us.
And finally, this hour, lots of ideas on tap for your weekend.
Thank you so much.
Here she is to take us all around town. We welcome the mistress of mayhem, the maven of mirth, the non-canine-owning Carrie Speckman here today.
I'm here representing the felines of America. A funny story.
They're not going to be doing a whole lot of search and rescue. That is not going to be happening, but that's okay.
I came unplugged. Funny story about maven, when you just said that.
Yes.
I took Uber this morning, and WJCT was on, and I said to the guy, oh, well, if you're in the car at 9:50, you'll hear me. And he said, what do you do? And he said, oh, you're the maven of something.
See, it's called branding.
I know.
I have tried very hard to successfully brand.
Didn't know me, but knew I was a maven.
That's right.
Of some
You're
kind.
The maven of mirth.
That's me.
To one and all.
That's me.
All right. So let's talk about this weekend. Ooh, Michael Jackson tribute coming to town.
Yes.
We'll hear a little of that music. Tell me all about it, my friend.
Well, it is a tribute to Michael Jackson, is what it is. Hence the name, Michael Jackson Tribute.
Okay.
It's the opportunity to relive the energy, excitement, spectacle, and pure joy of this legendary superstar and his music. They have I don't think it's called impersonator. I think that's...
It's a tribute.
Tribute artist.
Tribute
and
artist.
And they have a full band, and they'll be playing all his songs you know and love.
And this is at the Times Union Center. This is... Oh, it kicks off tonight through Saturday. Very cool.
That is correct.
Very cool.
That is correct.
Okay, get your tickets to that, and let's move through your list kind of quickly. We're a little tight on time.
Yes.
Friday, it's the opening night of A New Brain at the Five and Dime Theater.
Yes.
Also,
opening weekend of Steel Magnolias at Theater Jacksonville.
Saturday, it's a wine and chocolate 5K in the San Marco Square. Very cool.
Yes. So you run, and then you get wine.
1904 Music Hall has a big evening, a big to-do Saturday
night.
It's
called A Wonderful Evening, and it is a bunch of local musicians who are playing tribute to Stevie Wonder.
Cool. Guns N' Roses Saturday night, speaking of the police, at the arena.
And I believe, I don't know the total score, but I believe the Firefighters...
Did they win last year? Did the Firefighters beat the police?
I think they have more wins.
Okay. Well, you can check it out. It's the 19th annual Guns N' Roses boxing event at the arena. The police and the firefighters going head to head.
Fist to fist. Ego to ego.
That's right. Mano a mano. Saturday, it's the Jacksonville Dance Film Festival at Mocha.
Yes.
Also, Saturday night, Comedy for Critters with Mad Cowford. That's at Hotel Indigo.
To benefit Friends of Jacksonville Animals.
And
speaking of animals.
I am extremely excited to hear that Cutthroat Kitchen Iron Chef star Alton Brown is coming to town.
Alton Brown. Yes, he is.
I love that guy.
Do you?
Oh, I love Alton Brown.
He reminds me of somebody I know who I don't like, so that's why I have a problem.
Oh, no.
But I'm sure he's a very lovely man.
Well, he's Sunday at the Florida Theater. Monday night, let's play Little Red Hot Chili Peppers. They're coming to town.
Yeah, I know that's not the weekend, but
Where are they? At the amphitheater?
The arena.
They're at the arena. Okay,
yeah.
Cool. Now, on a very sad note, there was...
Very sad.
It was sad to see that the boat show and the oyster jam this weekend, due to
canceled.
A series of unfortunate events, got canceled.
Exactly. And the First Coast Magazine Food and Wine Festival sold out.
That sold out.
Wah-wah.
So, okay, so go to Carrie's Facebook page for the full list of events.
Oh, and one more thing. In case you've forgotten, I host trivia tonight at European Street in San Marco at 7:30.
Go and meet the Maven of Mirth. In the flesh.
What a thrill that will be.
That's our show. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross. We'll be back at 9 a.m. tomorrow. Have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.